Sports Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For residents of Milwaukee's North Side, their local environment has been shaped in large part by unequal city investment and policies. And that's had an impact on the quality of life in the area, from rundown buildings to segregation to unequal access to fresh food.
A new exhibit at the Milwaukee Historical Society shares that history, the stories of people who live in the community, and their solutions to these problems.
Over the last 5 years, students from UW-Milwaukee's Buildings, Landscapes, Cultures, Public History Field School, they've been collecting those stories from the exhibit. It's called Climates of Inequality, Stories of Environmental Justice, and it runs through the end of this month.
I recently talked to three of the people involved in putting together the exhibit for a look at the historical background and some solutions coming from the community. Camille Mays is a resident of the Sherman Park neighborhood in Milwaukee and founder of the Peace Garden Project. Reggie Jackson is board chairman of the Dr. James Cameron Legacy Foundation, the parent organization of America's Black Holocaust Museum. Reggie is also the museum's head griot, or docent. And Tiana Cooksey grew up in the north side of Milwaukee and graduated from UW-Milwaukee, where she was part of the Public History Field School. She's doing research on Milwaukee after getting a master's degree from Columbia University in New York. Tiana, let's start with you. Can you talk a little bit about the research that you're doing that's contributing to this Climates of Inequality project?
So in 2016, I started working with Arijit Sen in his Building Landscapes Field School. And through that research, we looked into two different neighborhoods, the Washington Park neighborhood and the Sherman Park neighborhood. And from that research process, I created my own project, which was the Women's Empowerment Network, which essentially looks at foreclosure and eviction and how it affects Black women in Milwaukee, and looking at how to use design and planning techniques to create a housing typology and to merge different strategic partnerships to create resources and utilize a housing stock that is currently vacant in Milwaukee.
And we'll dig into some of your suggestions in a bit. Camille, let's bring you in now. You've been part of this this project, of this research, of this community for years as well. What has it meant to you to work with students from UW-Milwaukee and community members on sharing stories from where you live?
It's really nice to put together community, university, and get the stories out. The university allowed the community members to reach things like renderings and writing up really good plans, getting their stories out of how they envisioned the neighborhood and reimagined the spaces in the neighborhood, and come up with very creative, innovative ways to look at future plans. I think some of the plans we even came with should be included in city plans. So it was really good for people to actually have a space where their voices could be heard and on display.
Reggie, a lot of this is focused on what we're going to do in the future. Can you tell us a little bit about the past, some historical context on Milwaukee's North Side neighborhoods that really form the heart of this story?
Yeah, so Milwaukee is, you know, considered to be one of the most segregated communities in the country. And basically where we are today is the majority of the people that live on the north side of Milwaukee are African Americans. And so the African American community in Milwaukee was very, very small in the 1930s and 1940s, but it was a thriving community. And as the factories and unions started to open up to allow African American workers to join the workforce in Milwaukee, the African American population grew very rapidly from about 9,000 in 1940 to over 62,000 by 1960 and over 105,000 by 1970. So very rapid rise. And those were people that were coming to Milwaukee in the latter stages of the Great Migration out of the South, as African Americans were leaving the South to go to a place they thought would be better for them. And the primary driver of that was, you know, good, high quality manufacturing and, you know, government related jobs in Milwaukee. And so it was a place that allowed African Americans to thrive for a number of years. Unfortunately, those jobs started to go away in the 1970s and 1980s and completely reversed the fortunes of people that came to Milwaukee for a better situation. And along with the jobs going away, we also started to see some disinvestment within the city limits. City and county government really disinvested in the north side of Milwaukee, really didn't put a lot of money into keeping the conditions, you know, the same on the north side as they did on the south side and the east side of the city of Milwaukee. And we've seen a lot of deterioration in the infrastructure on the north side. And so, you know, African-Americans are dealing with a situation in terms of the climate of where they live, which is something that they didn't create. They just simply been the victims of it, of this disinvestment and the loss of really high quality jobs that were replaced by service sector, low paying jobs. And it's really just kind of a really sad situation, because we have a lot of really good people in the community that work hard every day. And yet, you know, we don't hear those positive stories. That was part of what, you know, was really impactful about this project for me, was to meet people from the community and hear how resilient people are despite all of these things that have happened. And the fact that people were finally listening to their voices for the first time in their lives. And people are really, really smart. They know about the problems that they face, and they have typically better solutions to those problems than policymakers who are elected officials and other people. If only people would listen to them, I think we could make a lot more progress.
Tiana, part of that story Reggie just told was literally the buildings, the building stock in Northside neighborhoods. And that's part of what your research is looking at. What kind of really concrete, literally changes would you like to see? What would match with some of those community hopes that Reggie was talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that right now, especially in Milwaukee, what I noticed after moving to New York particularly is that a lot of the housing stock is just not being utilized. And I think that when you propose designs that could work and mitigate a lot of the challenges that are based on what people actually want and how people actually live, that could work. But I think it also needs to be paired with some type of economic strategy. So I've been looking a lot at like economic models that could be utilized to, for instance, separate the price of land and buildings so that you could purchase one thing and have equity growing. Because one thing that happens is once you start to invest, the neighborhood starts to increase value. So sometimes it becomes harder for people to stay in place. And I think that's one thing that we need to think about too, is how do you get what you want and maintain the positionality of it while still increasing value?
And Camille, you and Reggie have both mentioned the importance of, you know, not coming up with just solutions from on high or the outside. What kind of things came out of talking to people in the community about their hopes, their dreams, and the ways they want to get there?
So one thing I've noted, when neighborhoods do get upgrades, if you look at the Harambe neighborhood has been getting multiple upgrades, new businesses along 3rd Street, stores. And in a result of that, a lot of the people who did have housing equity in those neighborhoods had tax issues. They faced being pushed out of their homes because of that. So one, I think that we need to find something that protects elders and older and long-term homeowners when the neighborhoods do get upgrades, with being able to maintain and keep the homes that they do own, for one. And then the second thing that I need, or that I think needs to actually take place, is that people have to look at the home buying with the housing stock, right? We have city programs that have things for first-time home buyers, right? And people always point to those programs. But what you see happening a lot, it's almost like a money pit situation, right? Because they'll give them some funding to get into the house. So they had the payments on the house going. And then they'll give them like a grant or something to fix up the home. However, the scope of work will be way beyond what the loan amount is. So you take the mortgage, the grant that they get, or the assistance, but then they still have out-of-pocket expenses with, you know, getting the house up to par. So what I think needs to happen is, before they allow like the first-time homeowners program, I think some of these house and properties should be fixed up. And then also, a lot of what we see, or what people have been complaining about, is people from out of town. The amount of slumlords or out-of-town homeowners who own or who are buying up multiple properties in Milwaukee, I think to provide some type of equity to Milwaukee residents, it should be some type of incentive for Milwaukee buyers to be able to buy, like these out-of-town people.
Reggie, what Camille just said, all those examples point to how difficult it can be to solve some of these problems. Even in her first case, if you're successful and you bring in stores, you bring up the quality of life, well, you might bring up property values and people who live there can't afford to live there anymore. Can you talk about how sometimes success doesn't stick around or it leads to unexpected consequences?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are brilliant points by Camille. You know, when I think about the point she made about older residents who have been long-term homeowners, you know, they're dealing with some pretty significant increases in their property taxes. And there is a program in place, this anti-displacement fund, but it's very limited. It only covers a very small couple communities in the city. In addition to that, I think another important factor is people have to understand that the housing stock on the north side of the city is the oldest housing stock in the city of Milwaukee. And, you know, there's a lot of conversations the last few years about corporate landlords buying property, as Camille talked about. But what people don't realize is that there are a lot of other people that aren't these corporations, these private equity firms that have been buying up properties in the city of Milwaukee, because Milwaukee is a very attractive place for people who want to be landlords. Houses are very cheap for the most part as compared to peer cities, and rents are significantly higher than they should be, I think. But you also have people throughout the state of Wisconsin that are homeowners, that are landlords, and you have a lot of people from out of state in the last, probably during the pandemic particularly, when the interest rates are really low, you start to see a lot of private equity firms really begin to buy just thousands and thousands of homes in Milwaukee. And they tend to be very bad landlords. They don't keep up with the maintenance as well as other landlords do. And in addition to that, they are much quicker to evict people. You know, there are a lot of other cities that are dealing with that same problem. And some cities have actually put a cap on the number of properties that these private equity firms are able to purchase in their communities. Our city government has really not even had much of a conversation about doing anything about these corporate landlords, as far as I've heard.
We're talking about the Climates of Inequality, Stories of Environmental Justice exhibition at the Milwaukee Historical Society, focusing on Northside Milwaukee, with community member Camille Mays, researcher Tiana Cooksey, and Reggie Jackson with the Dr. James Cameron Legacy Foundation. Tiana, what is it like for you as someone who grew up in this community, went away, and now you're coming back to do research there?
Yes. Ever since I was young, I used to go to school on the east side, so a lot of times I would bus across the city and see how the city changed, either through a business district, some parks, or some highways. And that is pretty much what prompted me to be interested in architecture and planning combined. So I did my undergraduate at UWM, and then I just went to grad school for a master's of architecture and planning at Columbia. And all of my work through both programs was really focused on this idea that started in Milwaukee with the Women's Empowerment Network idea. And so my capstone is literally looking at, in New York, for instance, how have people basically been able to create resistance to gentrification, especially because the cost of living is so high. So I really started to look into successful precedents in New York and in Brooklyn in particular, but also understanding how, if you do, for instance, brownfield remediation, which a lot of people can access funding through that, how the neighborhood will change in 20 years because of that, and how steering committees are extremely important because they can influence policy and they can create those boundaries or restrictions to what gets developed. And so I think that really understanding from all of the people I talk to, the entire process of development and everything that goes into it creates a better positionality for you to be able to say exactly what you want and know how to get it. And I think that the biggest thing that came up was financing. And I want to see what that looks like in Milwaukee, because it is so much easier to access housing stock or land in Milwaukee. And I think that if people really knew how much potential Milwaukee had, it would be extremely important to get the right stakeholders together so that maybe we can collectively purchase property and be able to influence policy to stand against the big businesses that are able to do that more easily. So I think for me, growing up in Milwaukee, I've always been interested in how can I not only influence the way that the city changes, but also be a part in leading in that change. And I think that all of the work done in the climates of inequality, the buildings, landscapes, field school has taught me like the base mechanisms or methods to be able to go about the work. And now is really more exploratory right now to see like what is actually feasible, what can I actually do, and what resources do I have to tap into.
We've been talking about the Climates of Inequality, Stories of Environmental Justice exhibition showing through the end of this month at the Milwaukee Historical Society, focused on the past, present, and future of Northside Milwaukee. I recently talked to community member Camille Mays, researcher Tiana Cooksey, and Reggie Jackson with the Dr. James Cameron Legacy Foundation.